this is one of our more familiar gospel stories, one often misnamed as the feeding of the 5,000. I say misnamed because the text itself observes that the number was much higher, as the count explicitly excludes the women and children. As a result, we can assume the real number is much higher, perhaps 10 or even 15,000. There are some biblical scholars who look at this expanding number and view it as enlarging the scope of the miracle. How much greater is this story when we reflect and consider that the few loaves and fishes brought by the disciples were multiplied to feed even more, double or triple the crowd stated here. For these interpreters, this is a story of God's abundance, a story of God providing all that is needed and more. It is a story of trust in God's care to see to our needs, even in otherwise deserted places. There are others who interpret this story in a different way and see a different sort of miracle, not a divine multiplication of food, but the setting of a new human example, a divine change in mindset. These scholars see this story not as a miraculous feeding, but a sort of live-action parable, one in which God's action is far more subtle, but no less important. This becomes a story of God, through Jesus and the disciples, breaking the disciples and the crowds out of a scarcity mindset. I expect at least some of you have heard that phrase, scarcity mindset, before. There's a good possibility you've heard it from me. It comes up in church circles, often in connection with stories like this, stories of divine or otherwise unexpected abundance. We also see it in our lives around us. I recently saw a great example of it in a show called Alone. Some of you know about Catherine and my reality TV show Habit. This is our latest. The show's format involves dropping either individuals or, in at least one season, pairs in the wilderness. So far, we have seen seasons filmed in Canada, Argentina, and Mongolia. The contestants' goal is straightforward but far from simple: survive. On their own. Without even a camera crew, the contestants are given cameras and a quick lesson on how to operate them and are sent on their way. And once every week or so, they receive a medical checkup and they swap out their used batteries and hopefully full memory cards for fresh ones. But on these visits, the crew do not speak to the contestants at all, and the doctor will only speak about medical issues. Each contestant, however, has a satellite phone which they can use to call for help or, anytime they want, ask to leave. But using that phone means that they forfeit and are going to be going home. The last person or team standing wins $500,000, so they are invested in staying. It's fascinating to watch, and along the way, the producers very kindly provide informational text on screen telling us about some of the plants or wildlife the contestants encounter, but also talking about the physiological and psychological impacts of their stay. For our purposes, notably, we have the story of one contestant named Dave. Dave demonstrated the practical and devastating consequences of a scarcity mindset. Many of the contestants deal with extreme hunger and even starvation. They are limited in what supplies they can bring with them, and so they are quickly dependent on whatever they can forage, hunt, trap, or fish. for many of the contestants, as summer turns to fall and winter, food storage becomes a priority. Dave took that to the extreme. Dave was reliably and consistently catching fish, but he became so concerned about saving food for the winter that he all but stopped eating. A helpful information paragraph displayed on the screen noted that this is not uncommon among people experiencing starvation, that psychologically, at a certain point of hunger, it becomes more important to people to have food than to eat it. By the time a medical checkup resulted in the producers pulling Dave out of the show so they could send him to a hospital, he had lost so much weight that he looked like a child wearing his father's clothes. But as he kept protesting to the crew and to the doctors who were taking him home, he had food. He had stockpiled 36 smoked fish halves. Dave's problem was not that he did not have enough. Dave's problem is that he did not trust that he would have enough, and so he was unwilling to use what he did have. And that mistrust nearly killed him. The alternate view of our gospel text is that it is a parable of scarcity. The disciples see their stores of food, and they see the gathered thousands around them, and they think there cannot possibly be enough. And since they do not know how they can increase the amount of food they packed, they try to reduce the size of the crowd. They ask Jesus to send people away, but Jesus knows otherwise. Jesus knows things the disciples do not. And so he takes what they do have. He blesses it, breaks it, and shares it. In the common interpretation of this text, Jesus, in handling the food, somehow imparts a divine blessing on it, so that even as people take from the baskets, they never empty. In the alternate telling, Jesus trusted that the crowd would follow in the example set by himself and the disciples, sharing from food they had already brought. Some suggest this is why the text specifies that there are women and children present beyond the 5,000 men, suggesting that perhaps the men might be dumb enough to wander into the desert without any supplies, but the women, or at least the mothers, would be smarter and better prepared. In this interpretation, the miracle is not God magically turning the disciples' 5 loaves and 2 fishes into a feast. The miracle is Jesus persuading the crowd to share what they have already brought. A few minutes ago, Bailey spoke about the snack that she had brought, about a few crackers and a few apples, and no, that's not going to feed us all, but I could not help but look from Bailey to the table in front of me, to the food already laid out. The miracle in this story is not Jesus convincing, is not that Jesus creates food from nothing, but that Jesus convinces the disciples and the crowds to trust each other enough to break out their hidden stores and to share. I prefer this interpretation of the story because if it is just a story about God creating more food, there is nothing for us to do. I prefer this interpretation because, as with Dave on Alone, the abundance is so often already around us. We have food. We have shelter. We have so much more than enough. Even when there are scarcities in our world, it is so often not a failure in production, but a failure in distribution. Because far too many of us see other people having too little. And we think that first we need to secure our future before we can help them secure their present. We do not need God to create more. God has already created more than enough. We just need to convince ourselves and each other to share, to use what we already have. We need to convince ourselves and each other to trust that God will continue to provide as God has been providing from the beginning. Thanks be to God.